Thank you for the introduction, Dr. Crozier. And again, my name is Katie Clark, and I'm presenting today on using geophysical imaging to characterize phosphorus losses in ditch-drained agricultural fields in the Delmarva region. So historically, the Delmarva has largely consisted of forested wetlands with sandy, poorly drained soils. Definitely not ideal for agriculture. But in the 1930s, ditching began extensively in order to convert much of the land to agricultural uses. So, and then in the 1960s, poultry production made great increases in efficiency and production, and poultry houses became very prominent throughout the Delmarva. So with all these poultry houses in the Delmarva, we had a large amount of poultry manure that needed to be managed. The poultry manure ended up causing a lot of buildup in the topsoil of the agricultural land, and this led to a legacy of phosphorus that has been very difficult to build down. So there's been a lot of research at the University of Maryland Eastern Shore Research Farm on how to manage this phosphorus in the subsurface of these agricultural fields. In particular, some studies have found that phosphorus is moving in the subsurface towards ditches. So, in particular, a study by Kleinman et al. In 2007 found that phosphorus is actually 90% of the phosphorus in ditches is contributed from the subsurface, while only 10% is contributed in overland flow, which is different from what has been traditionally believed. And then another study by Vadas et al. In 2007 found that a clay lens at depth could temporarily perch a water table that would allow phosphorus to move at that above that level towards the ditches. However, with all of this research about the UMAS research farm and how phosphorus is moving at this site, we're really not sure if this is how phosphorus is moving at other ditch drain fields in the Delmarva. So we're attempting to understand if that could be the case with this project. So how exactly is phosphorus moving in the subsurface? Well, there's a buildup of phosphorus in the topsoil, which we can see here. And then when there's a storm event, the high water table increases and can enter that high phosphorus topsoil. And then that area, there's a lot of soluble phosphorus that can move directly to the ditches, leading to the hypothesis from the Kleinman 2007 paper that 90% of phosphorus is actually contributed from the subsurface, while only 10% is contributed in the overland flow. And this is different than what was traditionally believed. But we still don't understand if this is occurring in other ditch drain fields. And the problem is that currently, the Delaware Phosphorus Site Index treats all ditch drain fields the same. If a field has a ditch of any style, intensity, or drainage pattern, all those fields are treated as a high-risk loss of phosphorus subsurface transport. So we don't know if that's necessarily true. There could be other factors, including soil type, drainage capability, drainage pattern, and intensity. So we want to look and see if there's other factors that could influence where subsurface phosphorus movement is actually occurring. So in order to do that, we need to be able to see what is happening beneath the surface. So we decided to incorporate a geophysical component into this project, and we decided on electrical resistivity imaging. So electrical resistivity imaging allows us to look at the subsurface over a period of time without serious excavation of the land, as opposed to other studies that traditionally require us to dig trenches and view how the subsurface properties are interacting with phosphorus movement. So using electrical resistivity imaging, it actually measures the voltage impedance of the material in the soil, and then it relates that to resistivity. So relating that to resistivity, we can then relate that to conductivity, and we can relate that to salt concentrations of salt tracer that we can then apply. So with electrical resistivity imaging, we actually first have to determine the appropriate measurement sequence and electrode configuration based on preliminary studies. After potential measurement sequences include dipole-dipole, Wenner array, and also a mixed array, which is a combination of various arrays. Once the array and the electrode configuration are chosen, then the electrical current can be injected into the ground via two current electrodes, which you can see here, the C positive and the C negative. And then this voltage impedance can be measured between the two potential electrodes, which is the P positive and the P negative. So, and then that can then be related to resistivity, which we can then relate to how a salt tracer would be moving through the ground. And what another thing that's important to understand is that there's a lot of different potential ways that this data can be actually processed. We can have 2D arrays, which we can show just a slice of the ground and see what is happening over that slice. And then we can also see 3D arrays, which is pretty cool because they can move around and see the different, like a salt plume movement through the ground. And also, we are going to be implementing a time-lapse roll-along approach. So we're able to do a series of quick measurements over a period of time and see how the salt plume is moving over a period of time. So our particular research objective for this project is we're going to be trying to characterize subsurface flow pathways and phosphorus movement at two contrasting ditch-drained field sites on the Delmarva Peninsula. And we're going to be using these conservative salt tracers, chloride and bromide salt tracers, combined with ERI. And this is great because ERI is very useful in being able to see how a salt tracer would move beneath the surface without any excavation or serious damage to the land. So I have two contrasting field sites that we're going to be using for this project, and both have ditches. Our first site is the Buck Branch site, which is located in Seaford, Delaware, and that consists of moderately well to well-drained soil with minimal ditching. You can see there's just one small field ditch that runs through the field, and because of that, we're expecting there to be minimal subsurface phosphorus export at that site. And then in contrast, we have the UMES site, which has it extensively ditched because of the poorly drained soils. And we already know that there's a high subsurface phosphorus export, but we're attempting to understand how this process is actually occurring. So the ERI is going to enable us to be able to do that. So we actually set up a preliminary salt tracer study with ERI at the UMES farm site in early October of 2014. And we based our we took a background groundwater conductivity in the summer in order to determine the appropriate concentration of a salt tracer to apply when we were applying the tracer in October. And we ended up deciding on 3.95 grams per liter of a sodium chloride salt tracer. We were applying it periodically over a period of 2 hours, and we used a couple different methods of application, including two different wells, a 60-centimeter well and a 30-centimeter well, and then also we used overhead spray. And this was over a period of 2 hours. So this is actually a diagram of the configuration that we used. So we had 96 total electrodes, and that was in six rows of 16 electrodes each. And you can see where the wells were located and where the irrigation area was that we were applying, and this was located about 5 meters from the ditch. So currently we have the understanding of creating a 2D array, and the 3D array is what we are working towards in understanding how the salt plume is moving. So we set up this configuration to be used for a 3D array, but currently I'm going to show you results about a 2D array, which I'm highlighting here. This is the 2D array that I'm going to be showing you in the next slide. So this is actually the preliminary results from our trip in October, and this is actually, the colors are the change in resistivity from the background, and you can actually vividly see with the red and yellow colors the change in resistivity that was caused by the salt tracer that was being applied in the irrigation area, and then also you can see the wells also showed a change in resistivity, and the ditch was located in this direction. So. And that's our total 2-hour time. And then we also partnering with a group from Rutgers, the Slater Geophysics Research Group, they were able to help us process some of the 3D data and create a 3D image. This is a surface view, but I'll show that. And it actually is pretty interesting because it shows how the salt plume is spreading out and emanating from the irrigation points, but it also is important to note that this is concentrated only in the top 10 to 20 centimeters. The soils were very dry at the time we were applying this, and we're realizing that due to the dry conditions, in fact, there was very little movement of the salt tracer, which means also at that time that phosphorus was not moving. So what have we learned from these projects so far? We're learning that, in fact, ERI is a good tool to use to monitor salt tracer movement in subsurface flow. We were successful in seeing the salt tracer, so that was exciting. And then we've also seen that the water movement towards the ditch appears to be very minimal in the dry conditions of summer and early fall in October when we were there. So we definitely want to try this experiment again when it's more wetter conditions in the winter. So our next steps, we're going to be collecting and characterizing soil cores from these sites in order to relate that information to how the samples and how the ERI data is moving. So we're going to be collecting data on water-soluble phosphorus, Malic-3 phosphorus, and EPA 3050 total extracted phosphorus. And then we're also going to be installing a series of lysimeters at both sites in order to monitor phosphorus and salt tracer content in the water on the pathway from the irrigation point to the ditch. So as I said before, we're going to be collecting more ERI data during wet conditions in the winter at both sites and see how that works. And then we're also going to be using what we learned to identify different site characteristics that could influence phosphorus movement. So the implications of this research. This is definitely a unique field in the field of nutrient management, the combination of geophysics and a salt tracer to understand soil hydrology. So we're excited to see how we can understand the interaction between soil and hydrology to influence water flow and nutrient transfers. And we're definitely thinking that this could be a good method to assess risk of subsurface phosphorus transport for updating the Delaware Phosphorus Site Index. And this could also be applied in other areas where artificial drainage is common and the behavior of subsurface phosphorus is relatively unknown. So this could be a good tool for that. And the worms were not harmed in this project, but they don't like ERI apparently, so they all came to the surface during this project. But yeah, so thank you to everyone who has had a hand in this project and helping me, and thank you to you all for listening to my presentation. And does anyone have any questions? Well, it really depends on the electrode configuration. So the electrode configuration we had was half meter spacing. And that close spacing allows more of a focus on the top 3 meters of the soil, but with further apart spacing, they can get a lot deeper. So it really depends. And it's definitely important to consult with an expert in determining the appropriate measurement sequence and electrode configuration, because it can be very confusing, especially with the data interpretation as well.
Mm-hmm. And then you're going to put on both the salt solution as well as phosphorus at the same time.
We are just using the salt tracer to simulate the water movement, because we're assuming that water-soluble phosphorus is moving with the water.
What's the topography out there? Is it pretty flat?
Oh, I forgot to mention that. Yes. The question was about the topography in the Delmarva. It's completely flat, which is why there is so little overland flow. The majority of the movement of phosphorus is in the subsurface because there's such high water tables and the topography is so flat.
about